Executive State James Brokenshire has finally published the budget for this financial year. He did it yesterday evening and it's going out to the House of Lords later today. Mr. Brokenshire insists it still doesn't mark the beginning of direct rule, and he says he remains hopeful actually that the Stormont Executive can still get back up and running. But Sinn Féin, they say the talks are over and they're calling for a stronger inter-government approach from London and Dublin, while the DUP wants direct rule ministers to be in place within weeks. Let me speak to one of their MPs, Gregory Campbell. Gregory Campbell, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
I suppose as we watched James Brokenshire address Parliament last night, we were reminded of the absolute failure of the DUP and Sinn Féin in government.
Well, what we were reminded of was the issues that have only emerged in the past 12 months haven't been resolved. That's self-evident. But what couldn't go on was the fact that we've a whole range of departments, many of whom deliver very, very essential services like the health sector, the education sector, infrastructure, roads, etc. Those cannot go on being delivered without a firm budget. Every department requires a budget.
But it's a reminder of failure, isn't it?
Well, I suppose it depends on which way you look at it, but given that there is an impasse, a political impasse, whether you call it a failure or whatever, the government had to move. They had to do something. Is anyone suggesting that they should simply have allowed limbo to continue, the waiting list to grow, the health service getting worse, the education sector suffering, the teaching staff being undermined, all of that without some sort of budget? Now, we then come to the actual budget, and it creates problems in and of itself, but at least a budget is now in place. At least the money that we negotiated with the Conservatives is now beginning to flow. So there is a chink of light, because we managed to force the pace and get us to the point where we are now. But people shouldn't walk away. We need to resolve those outstanding problems, get devolved ministers in place who are better placed to spend the money. They know acutely the localised problems, and they can do that much better.
Now, you're calling, obviously, for direct rule. This 50 million that you say is now flowing out of the 1 billion, that sounds more like drip as opposed to flowing.
Yes, but would you have preferred that we had no money coming? I'm always a bit concerned that some people lambast us for negotiating extra money for Northern Ireland, for everybody, for all the services. Now, I would have preferred that £1 billion had started months ago. But then we're not to blame for that money not flowing. We wanted it to start whenever we negotiated it. And had there been a devolved government, it would have started months ago. But, you know, if you're faced with what appears to be an intractable problem, because you have two competing sides, one side of whom won't move, and have said, we have preconditions, the other side say, well, we don't have preconditions. And it's very obvious who's holding up the process.
But will we have a Tory government long enough to get the 1 billion?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and I suppose you'd be better having a Mr. Johnson probably on the phone to answer questions to deliver that answer. But I don't think we're at the end of the road there in terms of the Conservative government. They are obviously in some negotiations with the EU to try and get us through the whole Brexit discussions. Theresa May has her own problems. But the one thing for sure is this, that the money is now beginning to flow. We want it to flow faster, and we'll be meeting the government again.
But we need it
week.
To flow faster. We need
we
to
do.
Flow a lot faster, because it's quite a serious question. If Theresa May disappears, if there's another election, if Labour comes in, they're not going to give the DUP that billion.
Well, they may not. If they're in a position where they need our votes, they may have to give us a bit more. But, you know, that's one of the benefits of being in a negotiating position where you hold the balance of power and you extract money for the good of everybody. Now, we could have, months ago, went down the route of saying, well, we want a very partisan, one-sided benefit here, and we're going to ask for certain things. We said, no, let's get extra money for our services, for our roads, for our hospitals, for our schools, all of those things. Now, I concede completely that money needs to come more quickly. And it would have come more quickly had we got an agreement several months ago. Now, hopefully we can get agreement in the next few weeks. Then we get it more quickly and we can start to see some movement and we can start to see inward investment and get jobs in and we can see a much better future for all of our community.
So what are you really hoping for? Are you hoping primarily for ministers here locally, or are you deep down reckoning on direct rule being the best way in the short term?
Direct rule is not the best option. Because whoever would come here as a direct rule minister, and even if there were a series of direct rule ministers, none of them will be immediately or locally accountable to voters here. Therefore, when they take decisions, there will always be a sort of a third-party approach to those decisions, because they will say when they sit at a desk and civil servants give them papers and say, Minister, we require a decision. At the back of their minds will be, well, these decisions won't directly affect me because I won't have constituents knocking on my door saying we're not going to vote for you unless you take the appropriate and the proper course of action here. So locally accountable ministers have that concentration, and therefore direct rule is not the best option. But direct rule might be the only option available if people don't get devolved government up and running so that we have those locally accountable ministers in place.
And those locally accountable ministers, do they include Sinn Féin ministers in your hope?
They do. Yes, well, Sinn Féin get the votes. They're entitled to be in government. We get votes. We're entitled to be in government. The only way you have a devolved government in Northern Ireland is if people who get those votes exercise that power and get into government and do so for the people of Northern Ireland. That's the only way you get a devolved government.
Now, you know, your colleague Nigel Dodds was suggesting last night that if a deal isn't forthcoming to restore devolution, then direct rule ministers of some ilk, he said, will have to be appointed.
Well, they will. I suppose the NIO are hoping against hope that if they simply do what they have to do and not what they need to do, then hopefully agreement might be reached and devolved ministers might be in place. Now, we not only hope that that's the case, but we're actively working towards it. But it takes two to tango. If we are going to have devolved ministers in place, we are going to need Sinn Féin and ourselves and the other parties to say, right, we're now in a place where we can install government ministers here through the devolutionary settlement. We can get the extra money that the DUP negotiated with the Conservatives and we can make a difference. Now, if people don't do that, whatever the reason might be, whatever reasons they might try and produce as being a justification, so-called, for not doing, then direct rule ministers have to be in place at some point. And our argument would be, if it's not in the next few weeks, those direct rule ministers need to take decisions.
In the meantime, in the very short time frame of the future, the spotlight's on the civil servants then.
Yes, in the next few weeks it is, and hopefully those civil servants, they will take soundings, but they are in an invidious position. You know, if you or I were civil servants and we didn't have, you know, the endorsement of voters, we would be very cautious about what we do in terms of where we spend money, because at some point in the future they're going to be held accountable, whether it's through the Public Accounts Committee or through future ministers. So they are going to be, and the civil service being what it is of the essence, very, very cautious. So therefore, they're going to be looking at what previous ministers had said and spending money as they need to spend it. But that is not an ideal situation. We've got to get ministers in place, and we've got to get them in place very quickly.
And might the way back to that position where we have devolved ministers, might that be through the establishment of the intergovernmental conference involving London and Dublin that Sinn Féin's calling for, and move it along in that way to get Sinn Féin back on board?
Well, I don't see how that would lead us to a devolved government, but, you know, I think part of the problem that we have, Frank, is that, you know, and I would have thought people would have learned lessons from previous years. If you paint yourself into a corner, and then because you say these are preconditions that we will not move on and we cannot move on until we get delivery on them, if you do that and leave no wriggle room, and then people try to help you out of the corner that you've put yourself in, and you decline that as well, it becomes a very, very invidious position. And whether it takes time or space for people to gradually move into a point where they can adopt a more reasonable position, I think we've got a very limited time in which that can be done. But let's work at it, let's get it done, and let's get those locally accountable ministers in place to deliver for those services.
Okay, Gregory Campbell, thanks for your time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
Gregory Campbell, the MP for East Londonderry. I want to speak to Jamie DeLargy with his business commentator's head very much on. Jamie, good morning.
Morning, Frank.
Jamie, there's two things here. There's the budget and the important facts and figures and the provision of the services, and then there's the political wrangling that's almost running parallel to it, and sometimes it's hard to know if there is the heart from our main parties for government, for a devolved government, or whether maybe direct rule, whether they say they don't want it, might be in the short term some sort of advantage to them. So we could go round and round and round on this, and we have been for some time. The important element of this is, however, the money matters to everyone, whether you're interested in political parties or not.
Yeah, indeed. You can't talk very much or for very long about the numbers before you slide into the politics. The two are inextricably linked. And if you comment at all on the budget, in effect, you are making a political comment. And, you know, one has to accept that. And I think that most people will say that, you know, would agree with your the essence of your question there to Gregory Campbell. It is a failure. I mean, they're there. They're elected to do a deal, and they failed to get a deal. Politics is about the art of the possible, and they failed to come up with some sort of agreement which would satisfy, I suppose, the I don't know what you would call them, the hardliners on both sides, but certainly they could not come up with something that would muster support for their backers and their voters. And that's a failure. You know, they have failed. And really, it's really not good enough in a sense to say just, you know, well, that's it, the other side are at fault, because they're supposed to understand the other side's point of view. They're supposed to make concessions and come up with something, because this is far too important to say, well, look, we haven't been able to do anything at this point, and maybe at some point we'll come back together. It's incumbent on them to have come up with a solution, and they failed to do that. And in other words, people are now beginning to ask, what are they there for? What on earth are they there for if they cannot do what they're supposed to do?
In the meantime, the DUP, sometimes when you speak to them, they seem to say one thing, other times you're not sure whether they're saying that, making that point or not. They seem to see direct rule as an acceptable alternative.
Well, you begin to think that it's working for the DUP, because they came up, they pulled this rabbit out of the hat with the £1 billion. As soon as it was announced, people were very sceptical that it was ever going to come. And although 50 million isn't a vast sum of money, it is part of that arrangement. So it isn't as if it's a slimmed down amount. They had asked for £50 million for this year to relieve pressures in health and education. They've got it. Presumably there'll be a very good chance they'll get the same next year, if, as you point out, the Conservatives are still in power. And
yeah, will we ever live to see the billion?
I think there's a very good chance that we will. I think for various reasons, the two warring sides in the Conservative Party don't want to bring down Theresa May, because they realise it would just be civil war. And while they are unhappy with her sort of weak stewardship, the alternative, in other words, to have a battle at this point would be exactly the wrong time, especially when negotiations with Europe are going so badly. So I think there's every chance, and I heard a veteran commentator the other day talking about the realistic possibility that she will see a full term, because the alternative is so dreadful as far as the Conservatives are concerned. So I think it is realistic. So they are beginning to get results, the DUP. And as soon as they turn up with a few more £1 million, people will begin to say that this strategy of theirs is sort of, I don't know how you would quasi-direct rule, with a top up from the £1 billion is working to a degree. But it's not democracy. I mean, whatever it is, it's not democracy in the sense that you're now going to have unelected civil servants taking decisions, because at a certain point, no matter how it's set out, there will be projects that can't go ahead. This is just inevitable, and they have these quarterly exercises where money that can't be spent because for one reason or another a contract can't be signed, and so that money flows back into the centre and then is reallocated by the executive. That is when it's in office. Now, who's going to do that now? What's happened when that money, which has now been allocated under this budget, cannot be spent? It goes back into the centre, and someone's going to have to decide, right, okay, can't go to health because health can't handle this at this point. It has to go to education. That is inevitably going to be taken by, effectively, a civil servant, if it's not direct rule. And so we're now getting into semantics. We are into direct rule of a kind.
Just finally and briefly, will we see any difference with the budget as it is now, plus the 50 million? Will we see any difference as men and women in the street, or is it just to continue to grease the wheels as they go round?
It's just that latter option. I mean, it's simply we're just getting enough to cover the cost of inflation. So there's no more money. There's actually a shed load of money for health. I mean, I think people really, at a certain point, if we haven't got a properly functioning health service, it's not for lack of money. You're going to get a quarter of a billion extra for health this year as compared with last year. My goodness, why can't they make it work? I mean, that's not insignificant. That's 10 times the extra money that education's getting, which is the next biggest department. So really, what is going on when you get a quarter of a billion pounds and then people, I understand, I haven't heard it, but I believe that someone's saying, well, it's not enough. How much more do they want?
Jimmy, we'll leave it on that question from you. How much more do they want is the question from Jimmy with his business head on. Can our politicians get the system going again or not? There's an independent assessor being established as far as MLA salaries are concerned. What would your decision be? Full salary, down by a third, cut in half or axed? You can let us know. Good morning to you. 90-333-105-077-66-105-105. Good morning to you. Always interested where people are listening to the programme. Damien Gribben is listening on a building site. Not sure exactly where the site is, but he's celebrating his 50th birthday today, and all the lads have the trials out and they're shaking them in the air and applauding him. Damien Gribben, a very happy 50th birthday to you, Damien. Good day for a bit of outdoor work. Right, what's on your mind? Loads of you. You know, I asked the question about the MLAs, and some of you, I reckon, don't give it any thought at all. You just say, ax them, you know. Let's think about it. They've brought in an independent assessor, Trevor Rainey, to look at this, an expert in the field, okay, someone who understands the reality. Now, axing them, is that the right thing to do? There are other options. They could continue on their full salary. It could go down maybe by a third, or it could be cut in half. Yeah, it could be completely axed. Let me speak to Derek, who's in this line. Good morning, Derek.
Morning, Frank. How are you, sir?
I'm very, very well, Derek. Maybe it's the worst morning of all to be asking this question, because we saw James Brokenshire in Parliament yesterday, tea time. We saw him, you know, cobbling together a budget. We were viewing a reminder of what had gone wrong over the years. And I suppose today people are going to be very hard on the MLAs.
Frank, at the end of the day, the MLAs are sitting up there getting their big fat wage packets, and there's like yourself and other people out here working day in, day out, and they're getting a wage. They're still getting a wage for sitting on their behinds, and it's out of order, frankly, honestly.
Do you not see them doing any work for their constituents? Do you not see them even negotiating on behalf of their mandate and whatever? Do you not see the MLAs as working during this crisis?
No, Frank. Definitely not. Look at the state of their hospitals, their schools, and other places that's going on in the world. And then they're sitting there getting their chauffeur-driven cars and looked after by thousands of pounds of wages.
So the independent assessor, you would expect him to come down heavily on their salaries?
I would just cut the whole lot, Frank. Cut the whole lot, shut the whole place down, close the whole building down. The lot hand there for them all.
And have direct rule?
And have direct rule. Not a bother.
Okay, Derek, thank you. There's a lot of people saying similar things on the text. Let me speak to the former finance minister from Sinn Féin, Máirtín O'Muilly. Máirtín, good morning.
Frank, good morning to you. Hope you're well.
I am very well, Máirtín. As you watched yesterday evening and you saw James Brokenshire there in Parliament, did you not get a sense in your mind of how much Sinn Féin and the DUP have failed the electorate of Northern Ireland?
Well, the sense I got was, of course, one of disappointment, at which my fervent wish that we would have found a way to bring a budget to the Assembly, let all the parties have their say, bring a budget to the Executive. But, of course, you know those three letters, RHI, were the reason why the government collapsed December, January of this year. And, of course, the reason why we didn't manage to find a way through the latest crisis. And this is a failure. It was a failure on our part, and on the part, I think, of all those who want to see an equal society, failure to bring the DUP and the British government up to speed. They are still insisting that the status quo should prevail, that we go back into a government which denies LGBT community their rights, denies Irish speakers' rights, denies ordinary families the right to an inquest. And the rest of us, I think, are saying, and I actually think it's a majority in the society, are saying, no, we need a better form of government. People are entitled to be treated with absolute respect. Everyone at the front of the bus. So there's a failure. It's on the part of the DUP and the Tories to step up. But the rest of us will return to this task. And, you know, we shouldn't let our heads go down. These issues are not going to go away. This isn't 1969. I know some people want to turn back the benefits and the gains of the peace process, but I, for one, won't allow them.
Yeah, but you have allowed the, as you would call them, the Tories to impose the Tory budget upon Northern Ireland.
Well, no, I think what has happened is because we weren't able to bring the DUP and the Tories to, I suppose, 2017 and the society, the right to be a society we want to see, because we weren't able to bring them to the acceptance of what's good for the people of Scotland, Wales, the rest of this country, England, in terms of same-sex marriage, in terms of language rights, the same as available in Scotland, Wales, the rest of the same, in terms of inquest, what's available throughout Europe. Because of that, we have reached this impasse, and that is regrettable. But I think what we've done, we've stopped. I mean, could you imagine, Frank, if we had gone back into that executive and one week later, one month later, there'd be another corruption scandal, or 1 week or 2 weeks later, there would have been another attack on children because they speak Irish. Could you imagine how long an executive like that would sustain? So we took a very firm stand. Unfortunately, to date, we haven't managed to move the DUP onto that ground of equal rights. But we returned to that task, and, you know, the Good Friday Agreement, and I'm old school in this regard, I still hold great faith in the Good Friday Agreement, and indeed the St Andrews Agreement, two agreements the DUP turns its face against. And both those say that in the absence of agreement, that both governments will come together and they will decide the best way forward for the North. And I trust that will now happen.
Yes, that's what you're calling for. But in the meantime, how are you ever going to achieve the equality, for want of a better term, that you're calling for there with your examples? How are we going to get the best for education? How are we going to get the best for health? How are we going to get the best for infrastructure if we have an empty house up on the hill? You know, convince the people listening to this programme that our politicians, whoever's to blame, have taken us the right way.
Well, you know, occasionally I stand for election, and people take their ballot paper and make their choice. In the last two elections in which Sinn Féin has stood, our vote has increased. So the stance that we have taken certainly rings, I think, it certainly strikes a chord, with not only with the nationalist electorate, but I think increasingly with people who are not from a Republican or nationalist background, but who do believe in a rights-based, forward-looking, progressive society. So my message to all the people out there is that don't consider this a full stop. Yes, it is a setback. No one wants to see the budget being passed through Westminster. That obviously signals that this phase of the talks has finished. But I would say to people, continue to keep your head up, continue to campaign, because, you know, they said there was a time in this part of the country, Frank, where they said, you know, one man, one vote was not achievable, and you would never get that. Allocating housing on the basis of need rather than where you go to church on a Sunday would never be achieved. And it's the same, in my view, for those basic rights that people want, the right after 30, 40 years to have an inquest into why your loved ones were killed in the state, and the right to marry the person you love if you're a gay person, the right to have your language respected, and generally the type of society we want, that people are respected rather than disparaged or dismissed. So that fight continues in my view. And, you know, I was an early start this morning, an early start, just I left Stormont quite late last night, and in my view, and I know the challenges are massive, Brexit, for example, is looming. Austerity continues unabated. It continues to press down on our public services. But I would say to people, continue to fight back, that we can deliver the type of society that we deserve and are entitled to.
And in the meantime, in the back of your mind, you must be thinking, you know, thank God for that deal the DUP did with the Tories, because at least we're going to get that billion.
Well, no, you know, I always welcome extra money. Anyone here who works in finance always welcomes extra money. But sadly, this pact between the DUP and the Tories, it means that the Tory approach to our budget, that is, they're going to take 3% out of the budget over the next 3 years. The fact they took £1 billion of our money out of the budget over the last 7 years, that pact means that austerity will continue. So if I was a nurse, or a teacher or a public sector worker, inflation's now moving at a fast clip, 3% a year. So the wages in your pocket in a year's time will go 3% less. And there's no money in this budget to give the nurses the pay rise they're asking for. There's no money in this budget to give the librarians or the probation officers the rise that they're entitled to, and to scrap this cap. Because for seven years, the public sector has taken the pain. They've had a 1% increase per year. And now the demand is to scrap the cap. But the Tories, of course, and DUP voted against a motion to scrap the cap in June. So austerity will continue. So it's great that there's some extra money. £25 million for the health service this year will pay for the health service for one weekend. And that's not to be dismissed. But in fact, what this health service needs is hundreds of millions of pounds. And indeed, the health service in England needs as well, and in Scotland. And the Tories, with their ruthless policy of austerity focused on hurting the most vulnerable, they're after being wedded to that policy, and sadly the DUP is in their corner.
And do you not regret at all not moving that last budget?
Well, there was no last budget because, as I said earlier, and you will remember this because it was featured in your show frequently in November, December of last year, when we were trying to negotiate with the DUP to prepare a budget, they became embroiled in the RHI scandal, and of course one of their former ministers on his knees in a TV studio. So of course it was impossible to get the DUP to focus on the work at hand, and the government then collapsed December, January. So it would have been, I think, a testament to a fairer government, a functioning government, if we had been able to bring forward a budget. But of course RHI and the DUP's behaviour meant that the government collapsed. But there will be, in my view, the destination remains a devolved administration. You're working for all the people, and there will be a day again where we have an executive that has the confidence of the people, treats all the people with respect, and it will bring forward a budget which serves the needs of our people.
It is really interesting when you speak to someone from the DUP, they blame Sinn Féin on collapsing the government, and you speak to someone from Sinn Féin, when you speak to a person from the DUP, they blame Sinn Féin. When you speak to a person from Sinn Féin, they understandably maybe blame the DUP. So we keep going round and round in circles. When I say understandably, predictably is probably the term that I should be using. We don't seem to be getting anywhere, and it is incredibly frustrating for the people who will be listening to this programme, or the people who are going about their ordinary 9-to-5s, or hoping indeed to get a 9-to-5. You're calling for the establishment of this intergovernmental conference involving London and Dublin. What do you hope that'll achieve?
Well, I suppose there's a couple of points there. One, anyone who's in doubt who was to blame for the collapse of the government in December, January last year, should head along today. It'll be opening shortly. The RHI inquiry opens in the Senate chamber in Stormont. Go in and sit there for the 6 or 7 hours, and we'll be given and hearing evidence today. And anyone who emerges from that and says that there is more than one party to blame for the collapse of government, I would be absolutely amazed if anyone came to that conclusion. And you've heard, Frank, and I'm sure you've featured, and I don't want to go into the allegations, but there will be conclusions based on the allegations of wrongdoing. But anyone who listens to that inquiry knows where the blame led, and I think that a national opinion of commentators understand why this government collapsed. But to move on...
Yeah, but could you not go back into government while the inquiry is going on?
And what if there was another allegation of corruption in a week's time? How foolish would we be to go into government without the guarantees that people are going to be treated with respect, that the DUP has turned its back on this width of scandal. And we didn't manage to get the sort of progress and the guarantees that people need so we can have an executive which is sustainable. So that remains the aim. In terms of the British-Irish Intergovernmental Conference, let's just be clear, that's just Sinn Féin calling for that. That's what the law says. That's what the international treaties say. If you believe that international treaties are worth anything, and I do still have great faith in the ability of the Good Friday Agreement, that historic compromise to deliver real change and deliver progress, that agreement says, and the St Andrews Agreement says, that is the way forward. So it's not a marching away or a Sinn Féin. That is what is stipulated as the way forward. So,
okay.
And from that, I hope then that both governments will come to decide on the best way forward. And just to finish on this.
Very briefly.
Under the Good Friday Agreement, the governments have the responsibility to deliver rights. So it's up to them to deliver the rights that have been denied by the DUP to ordinary people here. Thank you, Fred.
Okay. Martin O'Mullier, former finance minister from Sinn Féin, with the Sinn Féin perspective on it. You've heard it from all sides this morning. Your opinions, of course, very welcome. Do let us know what you think.